as the guiding principle for your life, becoming a Buddhist. And Rich and I have talked about this because we've both been asked by a few Sangha members about taking formal refuge. And we haven't figured out exactly how to do that. Usually it's monastics who offer that. And perhaps if there's a number of people who want to do the formal refuge ceremony, we can look into that. But tonight we're talking about taking refuge in a more informal way. And this is taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So when we take refuge in the Buddha, we are taking refuge in the potential for us to awaken, to have little suffering in our life, to be able to handle suffering and the downtimes with equanimity, and to not grasp and attach to the times we're so happy and think it's always going to be like this. It's never going to change. So equanimity is what we strive for in that regards, opening our own hearts to whatever is taking place. And then we take refuge in the Dharma. And the Dharma is the teachings of the Buddha, and I actually like to think of it as the way life is. Causes and conditions, nothing happens in a vacuum. I think of it as scientific, that for every action there is a reaction. The way we act will result in something that happens. When we act skillfully and with an open heart, we will get skillful and open heart responses. And when we don't, that's what we get as well. And then the last refuge is taking refuge in the Sangha. And the Sangha used to mean, in the Buddha's day, the group of monastics. Nowadays, it doesn't mean that. It means a community of practitioners who are supporting each other, who practice the Dharma and try to live an ethical life with wisdom and a meditation practice. And that's what we're trying to do here. Now, we've got three sanghas at Sacramento Dharma Center. All of them encourage taking refuge, but in different ways. We take refuge in the original teachings of the Buddha that come from the Pali Canon. Other traditions take refuges in different teachings. They're all valuable. I've been going Monday nights to the Zen folks. I enjoy it a lot. It's different. It's not quite the same as this, but I get a lot out of what I'm learning there. And as a side, I encourage you to go to SBMG and go to Valley Streams and see the different traditions. Try them out as well. So I'm going to read this about going refuge from the Dhammapada. They go to many a refuge, to mountains, forests, parks, trees, and shrines. People threatened with danger. That's not the secure refuge. That's not the highest refuge. That's not the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. But when, having gone for refuge to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, you see with right discernment the Four Noble Truths, stress, the cause of stress, the transcending of stress, and the Noble Eightfold Path, the way to the stilling of stress. That's the secure refuge. That's the highest refuge. That is the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. So in the book, you have a question?
Yeah, but I'm going to interrupt your discussion so I can wait until you finish what you're
saying. No, go ahead.
Well, you know, what's always been most challenging for me in thinking about refuges is what we do about refuge is not outside of Buddhism, like the concept of refuge in our Western culture seems at least not explained or not put out there for us, but we must take refuge in something, something where we take as a sure, safe place or a foundation that we can rest on, maybe our families or maybe our television or maybe our phone. I just don't know, but But for me, that's always the most challenging part about refuge is, well, what is somebody pointing to when he says refuge? You know, because it's clearly a profound concept for them because it's emphasized in everything. But I don't have much of a basis to, like a toehold to grab onto in my conventional world. Yeah. I was wondering what your comments would be on that.
You know what, I think I'm going to hold comments because we're going to have people talking who are going to be talking about the different aspects of taking refuge in community, and maybe that will help explain that. And speaking of that, Jith is here, good. I'm hoping some people will be talking about different things that are going on at SDC and encourage you to take refuge in those various aspects of what's taking place. Michael, maybe you can talk, and you and Barb can talk a little bit about what's happening here. I'm going to ask Margaret to say a few words about her taking refuge and what's happening in her life. We also have people who have been doing activities under the radar that I'm going to ask to speak about that. And why is all of this important? Well, you've all heard, I'm sure most of you have been coming here for a while, I have heard the anecdote about Ananda, the Buddha's chief attendant, who said, and he was the foil for the Buddha on many, many occasions, and said, you know, spiritual friendship is half the holy life. And the Buddha said, no, 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 Ananda, not so. It is all of the holy life. So having people who are practicing along with you, who support your practice, is so important. And it doesn't mean just here. It doesn't mean in this sangha. It might mean in the outside. It might mean when you're going through some challenges, which Margaret will talk about. It's having a community that is supportive, that understands that you are trying your best to practice, sometimes in really difficult situations. And they're there to support you to do that. Your phone isn't going to do that. You know, MSNBC, I watch it, is not going to do that. It might get you aggravated, but it's not going to support you to have a more steady state of mind and to practice up to your potential, to open your heart. So how does the Sangha support its members? Well, Rich and Dennis and I and other teachers who come in, we teach the Dhamma. This is what we can do for you, and we do the best we can to have something here every week that hopefully you can take away and use as part of your life. I've said this many times, and I believe it. I think every one of you is a teacher and has lessons to impart. As long as you are honest, you're willing to be vulnerable and open your heart. A sangha is a safe place to do that. I'll go back and talk just for a second about prison, because we emphasize that all you prison volunteers know that in prison, it's not a safe place, and we keep emphasizing this is the one place with these people where you can be vulnerable, you can be honest, you can say your truth, and it's not going anywhere. We'll support you. That's what this sangha is too. That's what we want to make of it. And it's only through you and your lessons and your willing to speak honestly to each other that that's going to happen. This is spiritual friendship. In Sangha, we support people as they're going through life's transitions. We have a lot of people, myself, getting older and dealing with sickness and the death of partners and that kind of thing. And to have supportive people around makes all the difference in the world, who understand, who don't judge, who just want to be supportive of you and your practice. What we'll be talking about in just a moment, because I'm almost done, is wholesome activities, being out in nature, being with each other, reading books that support your practice. And I bet many of you have some other ideas, which I am going to encourage you to discuss after we give a few people an opportunity to talk about what they've been up to. So what I'd like to start with is Margaret. And Margaret just had a major life transition take place. And Margaret, do you want to come up here?
So I was asked to speak tonight because of a major event in my life. And those of you who know me, Kathy Vigren said, it's having compassion for me, so I only have to tell the story once. And for those of you who don't know me, then you get to hear the story once too. But it also has to do with what my evolving sense as I've gone through this week has been and how the Dharma sort of supported me in it. On last Saturday, my basement caught fire. I live in a high water bungalow in Midtown in 1910. Nice old wood, and it has what's called balloon framing. Modern construction has fire stops between the studs, and those old homes did not, so they act as chimneys for fire and smoke. The story that I have, I have a full flood basement, and then two stories above that. I was sitting on the first living floor in my dining room at my computer, and I smelled smoke. And I thought, oh, the wind has shifted. I thought, wildfires, right? And I'm here to tell you, don't assume it's a wildfire if you smell the smoke. And then I thought, no, probably a barbecue because it's pretty strong. And then I thought, that is really strong. I wonder what their barbecue, the tenants next door barbecue. And then I heard the sound of breaking glass, so I went out downstairs, I went out my back door and looked out to see flames shooting out my basement windows, and that's the breaking glass that I heard. I ran back in the house, had time to grab my dog, my little Maltese, and my purse, and thank God my cell phone, and walk out. My cat was sleeping on the second floor, but the smoke was already so full in the house, I knew I couldn't go rescue her. So my focus was getting outside and getting my dog safe and calling the fire department, who came very quickly. We turned out to be quite a case example. We had 3 alarm fire, 12 trucks. I've been told about 80 firefighters. And it's very impressive. They are very impressive, all those squads working together and not tripping each other up and the way at which, and also it is very impressive to watch them run into flame. I mean, you read it in the paper that, you know, they run to danger, and that's the first time I really saw it, that they run to it. The rest of us, of course, trying to be a safe distance away. So while that was going on, though, what I experienced community in a couple of ways. I've been very active in my physical community, my neighborhood, for years, and it is a close-knit community. And people I didn't know as well as people I knew came up to give me water, to provide a folding chair so I could sit. The fireman went in, got my cat, gave her oxygen, and I could not leave the house, so one of my neighbors took her to emergency. Another neighbor took my dog to a place that he's comfortable going to, a place he knows. And another neighbor got me a USB charger for my cell phone and a battery. But people just came and did all these little ways, little notebooks. They a lot of humor, which was helpful too, because that's the way my family always coped. And you are uplifted by all that. You really are. One should never, ever take any of that for granted. And subsequent to that, of course, lots of people, as they began to find out, emailing me, and including members of the Sangha, and people offering to open their homes to me, including with my little incontinent dog, and that's a real gift. And just that general outpouring. The fact is that community does make a huge difference. And I have thought in these last, well, this is the fifth day now, I think, yes, is of what it would be had I been alone, what it would be if I didn't have that community. And it, you still would get through it, mind you, but it makes such a huge difference. People have commented that I seem unusually calm, And I do have a button that says outwardly calm, but or now I don't have it because it was in the house. The things that helped in that case, I think, was aside from the practice, and I'll speak to that in a minute, but you do really become quite focused. I mean, I knew when I saw those flames that the only thing I could do was probably rescue my dog, and if I was lucky, something, my purse, for instance. And afterwards, I just feel very focused on what needs to be done. That's supported by the insurance company that is also very focused on all that, and very helpful, I have to say. I'm amazed at the amount of support that they offer, including they have a service to find me housing, and it's not just like plopping me down somewhere. They said fair and reasonable equivalence with what I had. So what did I want? And I said, I want to be near my old neighborhood. And she said, 5 miles out, 4 miles out, 3 miles out, 2-bedroom, 1-bedroom. So they try, and I have the right to refuse anything that they offer to me. So those, I want to say insurance, I know that that's their business, but their business is actually very supportive too. But the other reasons for the calm, well, I came from a calm family. I mean, I was raised that's how you dealt with stuff. I was an archaeologist for many years, and Amy knows that throws you a lot of loops when you're out in the field. You never know what's going to happen. I worked in environmental planning for Caltrans for 32 years. And highway projects are always changing, and you're always having to meet new project schedules. So you're all your life leads you to handling obstacles. But there is also the practice, and there's no doubt in my mind the difference that made, because it allows you to just do that focus. It allows you to do one thing at a time. And if people have said to me, well, what if you hadn't been home? Well, if I hadn't been home, the house would be up in flames completely, and probably several other houses in the neighborhood. So I know that as a fact. I know that if I'd been up there on that second floor with my cat Phoebe, I would not have heard the breaking glass, and I would probably not be standing here. So I can cite that to you, but every time I go there, my Buddhist practice says, and that's not what happened. That isn't what happened. And so this is what happened, and this is what you do, knowing what happened. This is where you are. This is what is. And that is enormously helpful when you are just looking at what is instead of leaping back into all the other scenarios. And the same way in the scenarios in the future that, I mean, what's going to happen? Well, Allstate's finding me a house, so that's a good thing. The other thing that helped me, to be perfectly frank, is I was already downsizing because I was going to have to sell the house. So I'd already gone through a lot of the process of letting go of material goods. And as my sick joke is, now a lot of my decision making is much easier, a whole lot easier. And that leads to calm too, I must say. But I've noticed I have been changing as the week goes on, and I can feel a little bit more of the heartbreak it would have been if my animals had died. I can feel a little bit more of all of that stuff. But the practice tells you, you invite that in, and then that is what is, and then you move on. And then there is, because we are talking about the Sangha. I mean, honestly, I can't tell you the number of people that have offered to open up their homes and or give me anything or do anything for me. And you want to go pshaw, or as I've said, Allstate is doing that, but it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. And we all know that when any of us suffer, we're all ready to be there with each other. I've been going over the 5 recollections almost daily in my mind. The 5th one has always been a killer for me, that everything that you love might be taken from you. And everything that I love was not taken from me. So I'm grateful, but I also know that that may happen too. Anyway, so that's my story. And my thanks, my deep, deep thanks to all of you.
Yeah. Thank you, Margaret. Yeah, you just put it down there. We've been trying to find ways to support Margaret, and every time we think we come up with something, we'll get your computer, we'll pay your vet bills, we'll do this. And she goes, it's covered by insurance. It's covered by insurance. So... hopefully as things settle down, perhaps by next week, you can let us know what we can do for you to support you. Thank you, Margaret.
And some people are offering their expertise in old homes too.
Wonderful. Okay, so I think the next person I'm going to ask to speak, who's been heading up some secret stuff is Sarah or Barb?
No.
No?
Robin.
Okay, Robin. All right.
Secret.
Yeah, the secret stuff. You're going to let everybody know.
What it is. It's that
Do you want to sit down and take a microphone?
I can just be right here. Do I need this? Do we need this?
Yeah, you
yes.
do.
Okay. All right. And Margaret. Oh, yes. Okay. All right, so a few of us got together because we spoke about... Oh, there we go.
You got to turn it on.
The other one.
Oh,
the other one right behind you.
Okay, would you help me?
Right
somebody.
The one
right,
there,
one right behind you.
The one behind you.
That doesn't seem right there. Okay, sorry. Okay.
Here we are.
You
can see I'm used to standing up in front of people. Okay, so a few of us, or actually I'll tell you this quick story. I was out in Lake Natoma, was it 2 or 3 years ago? Where is Sarah? And anyway, you know how when little kids go by each other and they stare at each other, you know, because they recognize each other and they look and they will keep walking on. Sarah and I were out, or I was out kayaking with my dog, and I went by somebody and we sort of did kayaking, and we both sort of did that stare like we were those little kids when you stare at the shopping mall and stuff, because we knew each other, but we didn't know how. Anyway, we finally, after paddling a little bit, we figured it out, and we came back to each other and said, hi, you know, we both go to, and this must have been maybe 4 years ago now that I'm thinking about it, but anyway, we were aware that we both liked outdoor things and enjoyed kayaking, and so we said we should do this again sometime. Well, we didn't, but what we did do, we still plan to, and but what we did do, there was a couple of us that said, wouldn't it be great to have a Dharma hiking group, and because we enjoy being outdoors, and so we got together and thought, what would it take to form a hiking group, and we came up with a few ideas and worked on it, and it's been worked on by several people, really down to the pretty good detail. So we thought, well, we wanted to be able to go, if we had a group, it'd probably about 12 people would be good. So what we did is we started a term, you know, when you start a group and you see how it goes. I'm forgetting that term. Yeah, something like that, yeah. And so we just did it. And we did it with the people that we knew right around us. And what the idea of the group was is that we would go on a hike, and during that time we would do some type of Dharma activity, being walking in silence, or maybe a sit, or whatever anybody had thought about ahead of time that it would be something nice to do. And we decided we would, for this startup group, we had, it starts and sounds like we're Silicon Valley startup group. We make no money. We don't make any money. But we decided that we'd like to walk about 4 miles, easy to moderate hike, and we would like to do some in town and some out of town. And so that's what we started with. And because we had a model for somebody that has been a leader in rafting experiences and hiking, we had a very good model to teach us how to set something up and how to be a hike leader. Because I am just so laissez-faire, it's very good for me to learn a model of something that's important like this, because when you do and go out with a group and you go up into the mountains or the Sierra, the foothills, you do have to have some planning, more than my usual. So anyway, we have done this, I think, 5 hikes. We've had 2 in town, and we've had good leaders. Each time it's been a different leader. I think Yana, Jerry, Diane, and I'm going to forget Barb and Sarah. And pretty soon I'm going to be one, and Bob. And I've got him on. Yeah, and Terry and Connie. And so we're going to share doing that. And so it's a real, it's a group that we would like to, now that we've seen that it can be successful, is open it up and move along with it. It was wonderful. We meet right here. about 8:30, we leave at 8:45, and we're on our way for the out-of-town hikes. And the other two hikes, we met down by the river with Yana, and at Diane's, we met for bagels at Diane's, which was an extra treat. We've been to two different falls and a loop up in the foothills and one in, actually up higher, the falls, Bassey Falls. And we went along the river with Yana, and with Diane, we did the Lady Bird Sacramento Walk. And during those times, we take a time where we do walking meditation, and it's agreed upon before, so everybody knows. And like in the downtown walk, we at McKinley Park during the Rose Garden, we had a silent part of the walk. It was very quite beautiful. It was very nice. So that's what we have done, and it's been a success. And we would like to make it more open so we can all benefit from it. And we will post something on a bulletin board so we can, because what it takes really is to have some email addresses and people to know who is interested. And we hope to have between 12 to 15 participants per hike, because that seems to be a workable solution to prevent issues on hiking that can happen. And we've agreed that we would take turns leading. And let's see. Oh, and then what we do is we share transportation. So the leader would do take care of some of those things just to alleviate it, so there's not chaos like my laissez-faire type of thing. So there is very organized. And it's been very successful, and it's bonding, and it's wonderful to do Dharma activities with other Sangha members. It's just... I think we can look around the room and we can really feel like we have more connection. Each time we get together, we form more connections with these different activities. So I think that I have to just say one fun thing. On our Sacramento walk, we happened to see David. Where's David? He's back there. Yeah, he was opening his restaurant. Tell me the name. Celestin's. We happened to see him, and we saw Margaret in McKinley Park. And then on one of our loop walks, here comes Tom walking by with a group of people on his birthday.
And they sang me happy birthday.
Yes. So it's really been nice, and I have to say it's very nice to connect. And I just hope that everybody when I was supposed to have it a little more organized for tonight, so I had a date for the next hike, and I do not have that, but I will do that, and I think we can put it on the bulletin board out here, so next week if you want to look, and we'll have a piece of paper, if you want to be on this communication so you're aware of it. Yes?
So, Robin, are you still doing hikes sometimes on the weekend?
Oh, this is what we're doing. That's a good point. We're going to alternate between in-town and out-of-town. Some people really don't like to do the long drives, and so we're going to alternate those, and then we're going to alternate weekends and weekdays. The advantage to the weekdays is there's no traffic, and you get to and from, you know, easily. And obviously, though, that eliminates people. So we're going to try to make it so, and it'll be set up. We started with five dates that we already knew we were going to do the hikes, and so we can do that again. So I think I, is there anything else that anybody wants to add? Yes.
Put these things in the e-news?
Well, you know, this is something that we have been discussing. They're not really SIM-sponsored, per se, because of, my understanding, liability or something, so they're more informal. So we're not sure if we should be putting it in the e-news. We're not. So that's why we're doing these announcements tonight, just to let people know this is what's going on.
And that's why you probably haven't heard of it, you know, and... Because otherwise, we would do it. But there are these concerns, and I think they're legitimate, or they may be legitimate. We have to be careful of the legal parts. Yes. So that is it. Oh, Barb.
Okay, say if you are interested and you decide you want to sign up, somebody will send you a Google link, and you can hop on the Google group and just see what hikes are being offered, and you'll also be able to sign up there as well.
And the neat part of what... Barb set up on the Google link, is that there's photographs. And you'll see some happy people. So, and that's fun. It is fun. So, thank you. Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
I'll say one more thing. We've been having a lot of conversations sort of about the size of the group, as Robin mentioned. And so we're trying, it's not strict, but we're trying to keep it mostly to send folks. And if they, you know, if someone wants to bring their partner, spouse, significant other, friend, you know, good friend, that's fine. But we're trying to find the balance between being inclusive with everybody, but also not having it be so big that people don't, that it becomes kind of crazy to lead, you know, make it hard for people to lead, and also just logistically it makes it really challenging. So we're encouraging you all to consider coming, and at the same time we don't necessarily want it to become like all the song is right now, because we're still trying to.
We're still figuring out the plan, the game plan. And there's been some really good input about that, so I think that it'll work. Because we, if once it becomes too complex, we know what can happen. We usually sort of disappear. So, I mean, people like me again, you know, if it becomes too complex. I'll use myself as an example. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Robin. And you brought up something which I want to announce too. Tom Hopkins has volunteered to come here every Friday at 8 a.m. in the morning to do a sitting, so it's a later sitting, and he is also going to stay for a little bit afterwards because we try to have office hours at SDC. So starting in the next couple weeks, we'll be having a Friday 8 a.m. sitting, SIM-sponsored. Okay.
Nice.
Okay. Thank you, Robin. Mm-hmm. Why don't you give it to Terry? And she can talk about her activity that's been underground up till this moment.
Yes, definitely. It's a big secret. You know, studying the Dharma is, it's not like just reading a book and getting it. I don't know if any of you agree with me or not. But I remember joining SIM and going to a retreat and reading books and coming to Dharma talks and going home and saying, what is this all about? I mean, it's supposed to be simple, and for me, it's not. So back a long time ago, probably when Omarosa was still on that TV show, I forget what it's called. It was about then, though, that I went to Diane and I said, Diane, I read somewhere that maybe you could mentor me, that we could work as a student and a teacher. And she said, nah. She said, I don't have time for just one person. You've got to get several people. So three of us started, and we started with the Eightfold Path. Mm-hmm. And we worked a year. We did some sharing. And I finished the I never really finished the book, but I, you know, I have a lot of dog-eared pages. And I got through it, and I said to Diane, we have to start over and do this again. I feel like, you know, I'm still not understanding this. And she said, well, if we do it again, you have to get a bigger group. And so that was sort of the start of what we call our book club. It was kind of by accident that it got formed. And so we would meet twice a month, and we would meet with Diane one of those times. She would give us assignments, and we not only began to understand the Dharma, we began to really build a more cohesive group within SIM, personally, I felt, and also become what I would call Dharma friends. On the heels of that, we picked up another book. Oh, you! Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want me to start all over? We started another book, and what we found is that there's a tremendous, it's like the roots that go deep under the soil that starts to build friendships in a sangha. And, you know, as human beings, whether we're extroverts or introverts, we really need that. We need each other, and we need to support each other. So we did this again for another year, and then more and more people said they wanted to do a book group. So we put out that we were going to do another book group, and all the people that didn't join just either didn't hear or didn't respond in time. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to invite people who are interested in doing a book group and perhaps signing up, showing an interest, and seeing if we can't put something together. I'd be happy to help you organize it. I'm knee-deep in my own right now, but it will only last, I don't know, we're on chapter 4 out of, we're reading Jack Kornfield's book, Wise Heart. We just finished Why Buddhism is True. And what we're trying to do is have a group that joins together, and then we're trying to break up and spread out so that it becomes more inclusive, it includes more people, and we get to know each other a little bit, because everybody has such valuable things to bring to an experience like this, not only from their own learning, but just the questions we ask each other and the chapters we read, how we share those things. So it's not really underground, and it's not really a secret. It's just I think there are some people that work that would like to do it at night, and there are some of us who are retired and we're more comfortable during the day meeting. So please, if you have any questions, I think what we'll do again is maybe have a sign-up sheet that we'll put on the bulletin board for people that are interested in being part of a book group, and maybe I can talk to them or they can talk to me. And I can help you put it together and maybe coordinate things. So there are people here who have been part of the book group. If anybody would like to input or add anything to what I've said, not all at once. Okay, well, that's the end.
And also, I think if you have suggestions for books, you know, that you think that other people would enjoy, Terry can help you coordinate putting that together and, forming another group.
Yeah, this Wise Heart is a really good book. It's fairly short, each chapter, and it has questions at the end to work on, and then we come and share. And we've been meeting in people's homes, which makes it nice. I think the Dharma Center now is almost in a place where that might be able to be set up to meet here, which would make it really nice. But it really is a beautiful way to enhance our practice and just to build our sangha. And it just it makes, you know, it's nice to come to a place where you know somebody. And this is a way that really helps that. So
thank you, Terry. I'm going to ask just to talk briefly about the family sangha and what's going on.
Hi, everybody. So Family Sangha is a project that's sponsored by the Dharma Center, and I think is something that's only really been possible because we have this wonderful facility. What it is a group for children roughly ages 3 to about 12, just at the sort of sub-teenager level, and we meet on the second Sunday of every month between 10 and noon, and try to expose the children to the Dharma in various ways. There's generally a mindfulness activity for the kids that's led by somebody who has been trained to work with children on mindfulness, like in mindfulness in schools. Rob Bishop, who some of you know, who comes to the Sangha, and Terry Wenner, who's active in SBMG, generally lead an outdoor activity, and then Donna LaVecchia, who goes to SBMG, who I think used to run a preschool or an after school and has kind of a million arts and crafts, does an art activity with the children, and then Helen Hobart and I sort of act as the organizers, and several of you have been volunteers there. Rich led a birding expedition last year, I believe, Marion. I wasn't there that day, I apologize. Savitri led a movement activity for the children. And then I think the only other parent who comes is Mary McComas. She has a four-year-old. At any rate, our dream is that this would one day be sort of like what a Sunday school is in many Christian churches, where there would be like a curriculum and kids could learn kind of about the Dharma. But right now it's very much in the embryonic stages. And what we really need is, if you have children who are in that age group, or grandchildren or nephews or nieces, we really need kind of a consistent core of parents and kids, or sorry, parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, friends, and children to attend from month to month, because it tends to be that kids come, the parents say that it's a wonderful experience, and then we don't see the kids again for a few months, and we don't know if they've just sort of lost interest, or it's soccer season, or what exactly it is. But if you have any interest, please do come and see me after tonight's session, and I'll add you to our email list. And there's also always an announcement both in the SIME news and the SBMG news. So thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Oh, sorry, you're not holding this.
Yeah. I'd just like to say something before I invite the altar committee to talk about what's up front here. As some of you know, Dennis is pulling back on teaching. He is only going to be teaching quarterly. And Rich and I are vigorously looking for some other teachers to bring in. So we'll have more of a selection, a variety of teachers, and we'll be getting together and talk about that. There is a possibility of an online course that is going to be open to all SIM members, as well as members of other sanghas. Rich, chime in if I'm forgetting anything. I think that's all I can think of right now. I might be offering a course. I thought I might this fall, but it probably won't be till spring. Gil Fronsdell has authorized me to teach an Entering the Stream course. So I might be offering that in the springtime. I want to put a plug in also for prison. Our women's facility is in desperate need of female volunteers. If anybody is interested and has an ongoing Dharma practice and is interested in going in Monday nights to Folsom Women's Facility, please contact me. Right now, myself is doing it, and Dave Judd is backing out. He's been wonderful, but wants to spend more time traveling and not working so hard. So if you're interested, please let me know. And then I think, Rich, do you have anything that you want to add to any of what I said?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, Jeff.
Is there anything we can do to help support you since now you have to have your load, and Rich has to have your load?
Well, that's why we're looking for visiting teachers. I talked to, and I haven't even talked to Rich about this, I talked to Aya Santachita for quite a while yesterday, and she said they're happy to send nuns to speak more often. And apparently Sister Damadina is fluent in Spanish as well as English and has online talks. So she suggested her. So we're going to be getting together and discussing this. Next week, Noli Alexander, no, I'm sorry, August 30th, Noli Alexander from East Bay Meditation Center, who's in teacher training, will be here. We're hoping some of these people that we're inviting might start coming perhaps on a quarterly, you know, visit and take some of the load off Rich and I. So we'll see. And if you have any teachers in the Theravada and Vipassana tradition that you can recommend that we should contact, you know, please let Rich or I know, and we're happy to look into it. I think that's it. Yes, Sarah?
Well, I'll just mention two things that were already mentioned, but just in the context of building Sangha, and one was the grounds and yards group that Bob, you mentioned. That meets monthly to do stuff. So if you enjoy gardening or, you know, helping out with physical.
Especially master gardeners are looking for people really into gardening. Bob, do you want to talk about that at all?
Well, what we've been doing so far is just having once a month yard day where you clean up on the outside. But there's a master plan that most of you know, Linnell McNeil. She's coming up with a architectural, she's a landscape architect, so she's coming up with a giant plan for the whole outside. So there'll be plants to tend and things like that, rather than just maintenance as we go along. So people who are interested in yard related activities or gardening or things like that will have an opportunity to do things, work things to the outside. So just let me or Jerry know if you're interested.
Yeah, great. Yes, Sarah.
And then another thing is just volunteering. You know, there's Margaret's got the whole setup team, and we've got the Donna Deposit team. So some of the things that we could use volunteers for are a little more solitary kinds of things, but some of them are where you're working with other people. It's a great opportunity to get to know people in this time.
Yeah, being of service, any kind of service, I think is, well, it's Donna. It's giving back, and you benefit, and you benefit others when you support your community like that.
And then one other thing is the Thursday night dinners that we're doing once a month at 6 o'clock on the second Thursday, I think it is.
Yeah.
Just want to remind people that that's happening.
Yeah, please come to those.
If you can't be there right at 6, come by. It's a bring your own meal, but there's also a lot of times people bring things that can be shared too. So there's often pizza or quiche or something else too. So, and I'm sure we'd be happy to share whatever we have with anybody who comes who doesn't have food. So just come by and have a visit before the Thursday night. So.
Okay, and Robin had something in, and then Barb and Michael.
I was really going to ask Mary if she wanted to talk, just to remind about, or just about St. John's.
So I coordinate a once a month service at St. John's Shelter for Women and Children, where we prepare and serve a meal to the women and children who are currently staying at St. John's. So every quarter I schedule 5 cooks and 5 servers and a purchaser. And if you are interested in doing that, just contact me tonight, or that's probably the best way. Just catch me when I'm here, and I'll put you on the mailing list, on the email distribution list, and we'll get you going. I'm always looking for new people, and it's a wonderful way to practice our generosity and give back to the community.
Thank you, Mary. And also, before we learn a little bit about the altar here, if you have any ideas about things you would like to be engaged in that you'd like to see formed, this is how it's happening, like the hiking groups and the book groups and the study groups. Come and talk to one of us, and we will do whatever we can to help you. But I think more of these special interest groups just fosters more community and connection and learning opportunities for all of us. Okay, so I think we're going to wind it up with Michael and Barb giving us some updates on this.
So I'm just going to... I'm just going to let you know that there is an altar committee that's been meeting for quite some time. I just started on it, and Michael with me as well, in the springtime. At that point, they had already decided a design of an altar like this, which takes into consideration some size issues that are very important to the Zen community. And this is plywood and cardboard, so it's not the altar, but it is the dimensions. And later we're going to bring in some sketches and give you some idea of prices so that we can get feedback from you. I'll just tell you that the really kind of exciting and challenging part of being on the committee is that on one end we have the Zen community that has images that they actually brush the face sort of to clean. And then on the other end, people are saying this is fine, or folding tables are fine. So what's exhilarating to me is that we have this diversity, and it makes me sort of, it's heartwarming to hear somebody say, I can live with that. And so just so you keep in mind as you're giving us feedback that we're really trying to close a gap so that we can have something permanent that we all sort of mutually come to respect and love. And we're hoping to sort of instill some sense of, you know, personal sense of your personal altar, a community sense of altar, and sort of a broader SDC sense of altar as we kind of move forward here. And Michael's going to give you some thoughts about that.
And the other strategic decision that was made was that it's going to be bring your own Buddha for the altar. So this is kind of like recovering a fumble that happened, right? Where they went up and bought a big Buddha for many thousands of dollars, and it was brought down, and there's all these problems. So we're back to the bring your own Buddha stage, and there'll be like three Buddhas from the three sanghas. There's a plan to be over on that wall, so we'll all be together, and you can bring what you want. And then we didn't mention the wall treatment, but there's some idea of having Soji screens up here, which it'd be like two of these or maybe four of these full-length ones. This is just burlap, not rice paper. And then maybe half ones along, though. People have been complaining. I've never heard anybody here say that the car lights from going to the ATMs over there bothers them when they're meditating at night, which is okay. So there's this other plan of having some sort of roll-down screen maybe behind the Soji screens. But, you know, we've been having, so what we want to talk about in a larger sense, Barb and I wanted to talk about, was the importance of building a place for us to practice and to have our community. And I think rightly for the last few years, the whole focus has been to getting a building, getting it running, finding how we can sort of support ourselves here, getting it going. But now we really need to ask the question, well, what do we really want here for ourselves? And some of us on the committee are suggesting this will be the stage one altar, and maybe there'll be a stage later altar that will be a more full expression of what the community wants. And so we were thinking of having some engagement with this group by having people maybe bringing in their own pictures of their own altars, maybe having a night devoted to that. Or many of you traveled a lot in Asia. You could bring in pictures of altars you've seen in Asia that you like. I think many of you know that it seems like many places in Asia, the building is an excuse to cover the altar. You know, it's pretty much, that's even. So what we mostly want a place that recognizes the importance of our own practice, supports our practice, but also recognizes, you know, a lot's going to happen in this space over the next 20 years or so. Probably all the senior people who started this community are going to pass away, and we're going to have some sort of memorial service for them here. You know, like, so John Travis, Dennis, maybe our mentors. So we want to have what we would like to kind of honor all of our community together here. So I was going to suggest the night that you and Rich, maybe we could have a night where people bring in pictures of their home altars or places they've been in Asia. Barb wanted me to tell this story, which I'm trying to tell in a way that serves the purpose of our talk and not seems sort of self, it's not really about me. So you probably heard too much about this program that Jerry Simpkins and Rich Howard and I are in with Steve Armstrong and Kamala Masters, where it's a really fantastic 10-month program, and we go on 3 different retreats with them. And so they're all up at Cloud Mountain, which is this, it's kind of like a blue-collar retreat center. It's just enough for you to get by on. And I really like it there. And I happened to spend a month there. So, but I'm going to tell you the story, what Steve said to me. Is Rich here? Yeah. And Rich was actually in this interview at the same time, so he can help me make this story more clear. So I spent a month there, and I was practicing a certain way. And then each time I'd come back to Cloud Mountain, I've had the experience that my practice doesn't start at the beginning and kind of build up to where it normally would go to after weeks or so, but it starts somewhere in the middle. And especially like in January, I was describing in this group interview with Steve, I said, Steve, it's so surprising. I'm not starting over. It's like I'm starting like 1 or 2 weeks into a retreat already. And Steve said in this way, which was, he never is dismissive, but he says, it's kind of like, oh, come on, Michael, of course. He said, well, this is why practicing in a monastery is so important, because you have all that accrued experience or time that you've already spent there to support your practice. And so, is that close to what he said? Sort of, kind of. So what we want to create for ourselves is a place where we can similarly feel supported and inspired and some continuity in our practice, even though the whole purpose of our practice is what we do off the cushion. We should definitely take advantage of creating a space where we all feel that we can have continuity of practice when we're here. So I would say that means you can't be changing a folding table out every couple of weeks in here. You have to have something like what we had at the Friends Center, right? There was something common there that supported all of our practice. We want to develop something like that here for ourselves in this facility. So was that coherent to people? Margaret? Yeah, I think so too. So there's on the committee, there's all this price point stuff, and the Valley Stream people are already committing $6,000 or $8,000 this year towards this, and I think we can get it done for a lot less than that.
What's wrong with that one?
That's what I sort of said. Yeah. So, but we want to have this conversation because it's a group of, you know, it's a group of 3 sanghas, and we want to know what's important for you guys as a sangha, and to put in the mix with everybody else. So,
thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Oh, Margaret.
Jim wanted to speak a little bit about the climate sangha.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Can you all hear me? Once a month, on the fourth Tuesday at 7 o'clock, some of us meet. You're welcome to come. We have a group called the Climate Sangha. And what we're about is different people do different things about the climate, ranging from what I'm doing, which is global. I'm working with Congress. I'm going to lobby the Congress through a group called the Citizens Climate Lobby. Talk to congressmen, both Republicans and Democrats, on a bipartisan solution. Other people are doing many other things related to the climate. Whatever you feel like doing, the Buddhist approach is it is what it is, and we just have to deal with it. So rather than go into detail, I think if you come there, if you're interested in the climate, if you come there, even if you don't say anything, it would be good to see what others are doing. And then maybe sometime you might have an interest that you want to share, and all ideas are welcome. Are there any questions? Yes.
I just wanted to say it is a wonderful source of support. We support each other's work, sometimes our delight in something, sometimes our despair, whatever is arising. But it's a way of giving us support within a framework of practice.
I have to echo that idea. That's a very important idea. As you know, a lot of the events that are happening now, the extreme weather has a climate component to it. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand what's happening. And you may not agree with it, but the science tells us this is what is happening. And many times people are down or despair about it. I come to the Sangha because Rich Howard said it's a way to process what we're doing. And this is exactly true. So many of us are thinking, what in the world is happening to our country, to our world? And we feel powerless to do anything. Well, when you come to the Climate Sangha, you can see that many people are involved. We support each other. So I would say come and see what it's like. You don't have to join. You can just come, and that's it.
Thank you, Jim. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Are there any final comments or anything anybody would like to say, something we neglected? Yeah, Rich.
I thought of, I'm kind of slow. It took me a while to answer your question. But there is one thing I would mention. That's another secret, and that is our Wednesday morning sittings at 7 o'clock. So I hosted it this week. There's nobody there. It's not unusual. Well, I was there, but I'm nobody. So actually, this is one place where people are volunteering kind of behind the scenes that you may not even be aware of. So, you know, Terry Townsend and Kathy Vigren and Jerry Simpkins and various other people. Michael Patty, yeah, comes all the way from Davis and hosts those sittings. And if anybody else is interested, all it takes is the ability to wake up early enough to have the room open by 7 o'clock and the ability to count to 45 minutes and ring a bell on either end and to be a warm and welcoming presence. There's no Dharma talk or anything like that. So just any practitioners that are interested in doing that, we would be happy to include you in that little mini sangha.
Thank you, Rich.
I got to say, it's an interesting experience to come in here early and have no one here. It's a very different experience, and it's kind of special. So I encourage people to think about
something like that. So Wednesday mornings is the SIM morning, and Friday mornings now is also going to be a SIM morning, so one at 7 and one at 8. So you have no excuse to not show up on occasion. All right, so I think that's going to be it for the evening. Any ideas you might have about groups that you'd like to form or activities you'd like to engage in or teachers you'd like to see? You know who to contact, one of us, and we'd appreciate any kind of comments or suggestions that you might have. And finally, may you all be safe and protected. May you all be peaceful and happy. May you all be healthy and strong. And may all of you be free from suffering in this lifetime. Thank you all for coming.